from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Coming up next on Forum this morning, are you wondering how to fill your cultural calendar this autumn? We team up with KQED's The Do List for our annual Fall Arts Preview. The hosts of The Do List, Cy Musiker and David Wiegen, reveal their picks for the best upcoming Bay Area arts events in music, theater, dance, visual art, and comedy. That's next. Join us after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to another hour of this morning's Forum program. And that dynamic do-list duo, KQED's Cy Musiker and the San Francisco Chronicle's executive editor David Wiegen are joining us in studio for this Forum Hour to let us know all about upcoming Bay Area arts and culture events that you may want to know about for your fall calendar and you may want to mark down and highlight on your personal to-do list. We want to welcome David Wiegen to the program, features editor for the San Francisco Chronicle, co-host of The Do List, and good to see you.
Oh, it's great seeing you. I love being here.
Well, I see Cy all the time, but it's good to see you.
But great to be in the studio with you, Michael, anyway. Yes.
Yeah, and good to have you here. Cy Musiker, reporter for KQED News and co-host of The Do List. And you can find a complete list of Cy and David's Fall Arts picks at our website, kqed.org/forum. We're going to talk about these, and we're going to begin, actually, I'm going to begin by introducing you to Macleod Hedeiro, who's here with us in studio. And Macleod Hedeiro is a musician and lead artist for Home Away From Home. It's an experimental installation which features artists in the Ethiopian and Eritrean communities in the Bay Area, which I think is great. I was saying by way of memory that I remember when those two communities were sort of almost really at war, because they were at war. This is a project of the Yerba Buena Center for the Arts in Community, and it'll take place at the East Shore Park on Lake Merritt from the 7th of September to the 14th, between 10 a.m. and 8 p.m. daily. And this is your brainchild, so talk about it. What do you do?
Yes, Home Away From Home. Home Away From Home. You know, when you ask somebody about the question of what is home, it brings up something very personal. And I think for Ethiopians and Eritreans, it's a real question that kind of lives in our daily lives. And the idea of Home Away From Home was to bring together Ethiopian and Eritrean artists based in the Bay Area to create new work based on themes of Home Away From Home, and to celebrate Ethiopian and Eritrean New Year, which is something that we both share. And it happens to be September 11th. That's our New Year. And
this is a big challenge for any immigrant community, is preserving culture while you adapt and thrive in a new culture. How do you propose to show how you can do that in this project?
Well, what we think is that folks are doing this in their personal lives all the time, that they're going through a kind of negotiation and struggle of how do we hold on yet adapt in ways that are relevant to the world that we're living in. And we think that artists are communicators, and that artists can do this in a way that kind of mirrors that process as it's going on in the community at large. And that's why we've been working with artists.
This is a large community. I remember when I did a show on the war in Eritrea and Ethiopia, the response was overwhelming. Just the number of people who are out here in the Bay Area from what you call home. Can you give us an example of some of the music you're talking about that you're going to perform?
Sure. I'm going to do a little tiny little medley between a song called Kemekem and Yetentu Tazalein. Shugie, shugie, come, 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 shugie, come, come, holo negrete, come, come, up, out in the air. Oi, la, la, ya good English. Oi, la, la, you on the ilit. Oi, la, la, ya good English. Oi, la, 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 la. Come back, come young to bed, I get it. Come back, come in a bed, call, call it. Come back, come call it, pull it, goodbye. Come back, come look in the calabet. Oh, la la, ya good ailet. Oh, la la, you want the ailet. Oh, la la, ya good ailet. Oh, la la, la la. Yahulu tewatash. Yatintu utesalin. Kanchima leyete. Aye gabe gabe. Tesalin. Yatintu basabe mata. Yes, not amen. No. Bafatari kota Taznialet never be unetu Kasyaunet utwal indetantu Mentesh betai yekui anagrishale Mengiz yamayri show yasta wushale Mentesh betai yekui anagrishale Mengiz yamayri show As I wish I
lived. Ah, MacLeod Hedera, thank you so much. That voice is dulcet, and you got a number of different octaves in there. There's quite a scale. Can you tell us a little bit about what that song means?
Yeah, so that was two songs. They were both love songs. The first one is a song that comes from my most recent album, We Are Alive, and it's a love song that can be loosely translated as I Like Your Afro.
You have good hair. You have good hair. Yeah.
You know, it's like yeah, that, it's like kemek kem. It literally means freshly mown grass, but it's like a euphemism for the perfect afro.
It's a tonsorial love song.
That's right. And the second little part of that was a song called Yadintu Tezalein, and it's a song that was made famous by Talahun Gasesa, who's like a real hero of Ethiopian music. But it was also done by Miriam Makeba, as she would every country she would travel to, she would learn a song from the place she was going. So when she went to Ethiopia, she learned that. And I think of that song as like my touchstone for what cultural ambassadorship can do.
She was an extraordinary singer. I actually met her I met her many years ago. It shows how old I am. With her then husband, Stokely Carmichael.
Oh, my God.
Takes us way back in time. Thank you so much for performing that.
Thank you.
To us. And we're going to actually make a transition here to Party People. It's a musical at the Berklee Repertory Theater. Cyrus, you've seen it? You know about it?
Well, I haven't seen it. This is a play that Berklee Rep is producing that was done a couple of years ago at Oregon Shakespeare Festival. But the person directing is the same in both productions. It's Liesl Tommy, Berklee Rep's newish associate artistic director. And this is a history from the perspective of the rank and file, from interviews that the playwrights did with the founders of the Black Panthers, both the rank and file and the leaders.
And we also talked to the Young Lords.
And the Young Lords, right, who were representing Dominican and Puerto Ricans in New York City, famous for doing surveys and thinking they were going to find out about police brutality, and finding out that garbage pickup was the biggest issue for Dominicans and Puerto Ricans in New York City, and they ended up having protests where they burned garbage in the street. But the New York City troupe Universes is doing this show. They're a hip hop theater. They do this show should have boleros in it, lots of music, and it's about again the history and the legacy of the Panthers and the Young Lords. And it should be a great prelude, I think, for the 50th anniversary of the Panthers.
Yeah, we just did the 50th anniversary of the Wilderness Act, and so we're coming upon this 50th anniversary.
In 1966, in just a couple of years, yeah.
And we're going to talk about theater also with David Wiegand, who's here with us in studio, executive features editor for the San Francisco Chronicle and co-host with Cyrus of the Do List. Pippin, coming back.
Pippin.
And before we hear from you on Pippin, David, which is going to be at the Golden Gate Theater, let's hear a cut from Party People, which Cyrus
is freedom to speak, the right to bear arms, patrolling the streets. I'm that, born that, die that, never gonna change. Left a few bloody bodies, making home on the range. The American way, nation of brute strength, made a national pastime. Rattling clips, we let the cannons explode. Hot rockets, red glare, too many men in the town, locked in 1,000-yard stairs.
In every housing, give me justice, give me peace.
I'm American.
In every housing, give me justice.
That's a cut from Party People, the musical at the Berklee Repertory Theater. And the dates on that, by the way, October 17th to November 16th. Music from the play by Universes. And let's talk about Pippin, an old favorite, David Wiegand.
Yeah, am I the old favorite? Or the
no, there's no favorite. Well, you're an old favorite of mine.
Thank you so much. No, I actually was reminiscing a little bit about Pippin. I am old enough to have seen the original, which was unbelievable because the cast included Jill Clayburgh, Ben Vereen, Granny Clampett, Irene Ryan was in it, and it was a wonderful, weird musical that Stephen Schwartz wrote about the son of Charlemagne, and then it got revived on Broadway to great acclaim and won some Tonys, and now it's coming into the Golden Gate Theater. In fact, John Rubenstein is back in it, but not playing Pippin. He plays the king. He's a little longer in the tooth these days, as am I.
Well, and Jill Clayburgh is no longer with us. Ben Vereen has been through all kinds of tragedy and heartache and injuries and everything. But Pippin is back, and so is Promises, Promises.
Promises, Promises is an odd show. Also comes from around the same era. This is a musical that celebrates the music of Burt Bacharach and Hal David in particular. And it's based on Billy Wilder's great film, The Apartment.
It's Neil Simon.
The
Apartment by Neil Simon.
Right.
And he wrote the book for the play. I think he did.
Right. I think he did.
And
we should mention it's at the San Francisco Playhouse.
Exactly.
November 18th.
That's
January
a revival,
10th.
Really interesting revival.
A little more on theater from you, Cy. They've got this thing at the Aurora Theater, which is one of our underrated theaters, really. It's running right now. Rapture, Blister, Burn?
Right. Just opening this week. And this is a play by Gina Gianfrido, who also wrote a wonderful play that was done at San Francisco Playhouse. We were just talking about that company a couple of years ago, a play called Becky Shaw. And it's provocative, sexually fun, and very funny plays that sometimes turn gender roles on their heads. And in this, she's offering theme and variations on modern feminism and the role of a wife and mother. And what director Desdemona Chang told me, she said, called The Stigma of Spinsterhood. It's about a scholar, a woman who's rejected a boyfriend and chose a role in academia, and perhaps the jealousy, the concern she feels for whether she missed out on something. And this is just wonderful, effortless dialogue, a very funny play at the Aurora Theater.
And we also have on our theater list, and this will complete things that you should be jotting down, particularly you theater lovers, and make yourself mindful of, David Wiegand, The Old Woman, which features, no less, Mikhail Baryshnikov and William Dafoe.
Yeah, not too shabby. it's a production by Robert Wilson. If people know Robert Wilson's work, it's very avant-garde. It's very experimental. It's very challenging and almost always rewarding. This is based on a work by a Russian poet named Daniil Karms. It was written in the turn of the century, and it's about a sort of strange, unwanted house guest who shows up and throws everybody's lives into chaos. And obviously, these two great actors, this has been performed elsewhere and has gotten amazing reviews, and it'll be here on the 21st and 23rd at Cal Performances in Berkeley. It's one of those don't-miss things.
Yeah, that's in November. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I should nice to have mentioned the month, but
are these all no miss? Are quasi no misses or semi no misses? Or I mean, you've been very careful about what you've selected here, and
we have, but I mean, there are actually more that we could. I mean, Naomi Wallace's play "And I in Silence" is going to be at Magic Theater, just opened in New York, and this sounds like a tremendous. I mean, it's one that I'm not going to miss. It's just, you know, our don't miss list tends to be a little longer, maybe, than most people's, but. It's great to explore it all.
Well, you could just say do list.
Do list.
That's a little more neutralized than not miss. But a lot of people don't like to miss. I'm going to make a little segue here. Get into the world of classical kinds of entertainment, and they don't like to miss things that are involving MTT, that is Michael Tilson Thomas, and the symphony. They open their 20th season, and you hear a little bit about this from Cy Musiker. But first, let's hear actually something by Mason Bates, part of the symphony season, and this is a cut from Alternative Energy.
Thank you.
Well, so I got to admit to you, it started out a little bit like John Cage and turned into a little bit like Peter and the Wolf. But what are we talking about?
I think that's a car crank. It's supposed to be a car crank. And then some of that buzzing noise is sampled sounds from the Fermi Labs Atomic Collider. So this is Mason Bates' newish piece, Alternative Energy, that got a terrific performance here a couple of years ago by the Chicago Symphony. They've just recorded it. And now the San Francisco Symphony is recording the same piece. Just next week, they'll be doing it for 4 days, the 10th through the 13th. And I thought it was just fabulous. And it's about it starts in kind of the early industrial age and then takes us to a post-industrial dystopia, Icelandic rainforest, if you can imagine. But that's just one of the highlights of a season that's honoring 20 years of Michael Tilson Thomas conducting the symphony and being the music director, which have been, you know, really fun years with a lot of great American music. He's still a very, very rare thing for a conductor, a music director to program so much 20th century music that MTT does. This season, there'll be other new work by Adams and others. And there's also a Beethoven festival, which is a little bit of a throwback, but that's much of that. It comes very late in the year, next June.
Are they bringing Bonnie Raitt in too?
That's tonight.
That's tonight.
That's for the gala. She'll be doing three songs tonight during the performance, and also Yuzha Wong is on the bill tonight too.
So this has already begun, the celebration of the 20th season.
It kicks off.
That's right.
But let's find out from you, David, about Curlew River. That's by Benjamin Britten. That's going to be at Zellerbach at UC Berkeley.
It is. I'm really looking forward to this. I saw it in 1995 at Theater Artaud when Chanticleer did a staging of it there. This is what Britten called a church parable. It's a small opera, and it's heavily influenced by No Theater. He and his life partner, Peter Peers, made a world trip in the mid-50s and ended up in Japan, and he was really taken with No Theater. It's the main part is for a mad woman, and that was written for Peter Peers, and we're very, very fortunate that the role will be performed by Ian Bostrich when Cal Performances does it November 14th and 15th, and I personally, this is at the top of my personal don't miss list.
Well, November 14th and 15th at Zellerbach, we're going to hear a cut from the Curlew River by Benjamin Britten. Here it is. That's a cut from Curlew River by Benjamin Britten, and this recording performed by Harold Blackburn with the English Opera Group Orchestra. And that's a not miss for our guest David Wiegand, part of the Do List with Cy Musiker. I'm interested in maybe finding out what some of you, hearing these two gentlemen who are always on top of what's out there to be entertained by and to be pleased and compelled by, what you, our listeners, are thinking about at this point is not to be missed, either what you've heard here or what you know about and what is in your purview. I'm going to put that out to you and invite you to join us. And there are, of course, a number of ways to join us. You can join us by phone. Our toll-free number, 866-733-6786. Again, that's 866-733-6786, or email us, forum@kqed.org, or go to our website, kqed.org/forum, and click on this segment, and you can also tweet us. Our Twitter handle is @KQEDForum. But what kinds of things are you looking forward to? I must tell you, this weekend I'm going to see Motown with sort of mixed misgivings. I love the music. Everything I've read says that it's kind of a disaster in terms of the story, a tribute mainly to Berry Gordy and his ego. And that was sort of your response, wasn't it, Cyrus?
That was very much my response. But it's just marvelous to watch, to hear even people do cover versions, really skilled cover versions of these great, great songs from Motown history.
Any other, I want to get to the visual arts, but any other thing in the realm of the classical or theater, which we were talking about from
either
of you?
I wanted to mention one thing that, in speaking of 50-year anniversaries, we have the 50th anniversary of the free speech movement coming up. And in advance of a weekend of events that they're doing at UC Berkeley, obviously, StageBridge is creating a play about FSM, which will have music by co-written by Mario Savio's son, Daniel, and his widow will be participating in it. And it'll be a theatrical work looking at free speech, and obviously this was ground zero for free speech 50 years ago, and that's a wonderful sort of intersection, much like what McLeod is doing, where you have real issues that are sort of, you know, intersecting with the arts in a hopefully interesting way.
And that opens at StageBridge later in September. It's going to be in Oakland.
Right. So you both ready to talk about visual arts?
Yeah, sure.
Well, we have a couple minutes here before the break. Let's talk about what's at the Alcatraz Eye. That's from This begins September 27th. It goes to April at Alcatraz Island.
Right. This is At Large, Ai Weiwei on Alcatraz. This is Beijing's Ai Weiwei, one of the world's foremost artists, but also one of the world's foremost human rights activists and political prisoners. He was imprisoned by the Chinese government for 81 days some time ago, and then also still is limited in his movement. But he's overseeing a set of art installations on the meaning of confinement and political speech on Alcatraz in parts of the island that the public is normally not able to get to see. So this is a great opportunity to see parts of Alcatraz we don't get to. He's going to honor both the formidable military and federal history of this prison, but also the its meaning as a Native American protest site for the AIM protesters back in the 70s. And I really – this is
– AIM being the American Indian Movement.
The American Indian Movement. Thank you. And you know, very – and Cheryl Haynes at Foresight Foundation commissioned this. It's kind of exciting that she's doing this sort of against great odds because, again, he can't come here. So he's supervising this by phone and video. And then also to the Golden Gate National Recreation Area, which is pretty much giving Ai Weiwei free rein. They've worked with artists and Cheryl Rain at the Foresight Foundation.
It's a big deal bringing him here.
Oh, absolutely.
I'm just wondering, though, my brother's a docent at Alcatraz. Are these areas that he may not have even seen?
I think he's probably been to them. I mean, it's not that they're that far away, but they won't be open. Normally they're not open to the public. But the hard part will be getting there. So you got to book your tickets 90 days in advance. Think a drizzly day in January is a great time to go because because there'll be fewer less competition for the tickets.
But the boat ride will be so much fun.
But it'll still be a pretty ride. It's still worth getting over there. Just have to fight with the very heavily booked commute.
Well, there's going to be competition for a lot of these events that we're covering here. Yeah. And let's talk – as we come up on the break here, David, let's talk with you about an event that's scheduled, Keith Haring, the political line of the Young.
Yeah, this is going to be 130 paintings, sculptures, and drawings that will be at the De Young Museum from November 8th to February 16th. And this is actually the first major retrospective of Haring's work on the West Coast in about 20 years. As many people know, he was very active in the 80s and died in 1990. But we have work of his that we've seen. His influence on contemporary art, I think, is very much alive. He brought street art and political art into museums and into daily life. It was sort of ubiquitous. And I think even though many of the issues have changed or evolved that he was talking about in the 80s, I think that the art still survives, and this should be a tremendously interesting program.
Well, we hope is also a tremendously interesting program, giving you all kinds of ideas of what to do with your time, and talking to KQED's The Do List, the dynamic duo of Cy Musiker and David Wiegand. And you can join us if you have something you think is a not miss, kqed.org or 866-733-6786. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny, and if you're wondering how to fill your cultural and entertainment calendar this autumn, you've come to the right place. We're teaming up with KQED's Do List for its annual Fall Arts Preview, and the hosts of the Do List, Cy Musiker and David Wiegand, are here with us revealing their picks for the best upcoming Bay Area events in music, theater, dance, visual art, and comedy. And I put the challenge out to listeners to tell us from what you're hearing from both David and Cy what really excites you and what you feel maybe you can't miss, or if there is something on your Do List that you feel you have to see. I'll tell you something that's on mine, and we're going to talk about it with Cy and with Connie Wolfe, who's going to join us by phone, and that's these events that are going on at Stanford. The Anderson Collection opens September 21st, the day before your Jeannie will host birthday, and it's a good birthday present to go down there and see Rothko, Demon Court, de Kooning. I mean, it's just an extraordinary collection. And this is also with the Sanderson Collection is opening along with the Robert Frank in America. That's at the Kanner Arts Center at Stanford. And tell us about this kind of binary thing that's going on down at Stanford campus.
Huh? Right. Well, the Anderson Collection, it comes from Harry and Mary Anderson, who are neighbors of Stanford campus in Palo Alto. And they have great taste. They built a fortune with Saga Foods. When I was a college student, Saga Foods was the food provider on my campus. I worked for them, so that's full disclosure. I used to make 60 cents an hour washing dishes for Saga Foods. But I got a visit to the house, and it's just stunning to walk into these rooms and you see...
You're making a little bit more now, but not much.
Not by much. Right. It's still public radio. Anyway, Harry and Mary Anderson offered this collection to Stanford with the provision that there'd be a separate museum for them, and they've created one, and it creates this fabulous arts complex at Stanford, along with the Cantor and the Bing Concert Hall, which opened a couple years ago now. Very exciting for the students as well as for everybody else. One of the fabulous things is that even though the first few weeks at the Anderson are going to be time tickets, it's all free. Cantor Museum is free. The Anderson is free. A wonderful tradition in a world where it's $25 to go to New York's Museum of Modern Art, $15 at the Oakland Museum of Art for adults without discount.
And for those of you who haven't been at the Cantor Art Museum, it is really a world-class museum. And the director of the Cantor Art Center is Connie Wolfe, and she joins us by phone. Connie, good to have you. Welcome.
Wonderful to be here. Thank you so much. It is truly a great moment at Stanford with the arts exploding. As Cy just said, the Bing Concert Hall opened a year and a half ago. The Cantor, the oldest museum in the Bay Area, opened in 1894 and still continues to be really a great resource here. And now the Anderson Collection at Stanford University opens in just a matter of weeks.
I have to tell you just a quick anecdote about the Cantor Museum. The last time I was there, I was teaching a course at Stanford, and I was supposed to meet Tobias Wolff, who was going to come to my class, and he said, "I'll meet you by the Rodin statues." And I thought they were the ones next to the Cantor Museum. It turned out they were another batch of statues. I mean, you have as many Rodin statues on that campus almost as you do in Paris.
Well, I think we have quite a number, so we really do invite people to come down. It's a great experience to come to the campus, and now you'll be able to not only appreciate Rodin and the great Cantor collection, but really the extraordinary generous gift of the Andersons. You know, they've been so generous to the Bay Area. They've given work to SF MoMA. They've given work to the Fine Arts Museum, and now they're leaving this extraordinary centerpiece of their collection, 121 great works, to Stanford University. So the Bay Area is really fortunate from their generosity.
Joan Mitchell's work is included in that. I mentioned a number of artists, but they were all male artists, and she's included. This is the Anderson Collection opening September 21st, Connie?
Yes, it opens to the public September 21st, and I'm very happy to say that beginning September 22nd, the Cantor Art Center and the Anderson Collection will both be open 6 days a week, open every day but Tuesday, and admission is always free.
Jake, come down on my birthday.
I want to hear about the Robert Frank show. Tell us a little bit more about this. This is filling in the context for Robert Frank's book, his photo essay called The Americans. It was printed in 1959, which is just a stunning collection of black and white photographs of Americans by this Swiss photographer. What are we going to see in this Cantor collection?
Well, you know, what's really extraordinary was that the Cantor has one of the largest collections of Robert Franks in the Bay Area. And so we thought it'd be wonderful, in conjunction with the opening of the Anderson Collection, to really showcase another great American artist, Robert Frank. And so Peter Galassi, the former chief curator of photography at MoMA New York, has stepped in to help curate this exhibition. And so while everyone may know Robert Frank's The Americans, this sort of wonderful moment in American photography when a photographer went from being a photojournalist to really creating a personal poetic voice, and that book is such a landmark, Well, it turns out, as we could only imagine, that Robert Frank made many different photographs in the 1950s as part of that project. And for the first time, we will be showcasing work from that period that really examines what Robert Frank saw in America in the 1950s in a much broader and deeper context.
And Robert Frank in America will be at the Kanner Arts Center at Stanford University from September 10th till January 5th, and the Anderson Collection opens 21st of September. Connie, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you, and we look forward to welcoming everyone to Stanford.
Connie Wolfe, director of the Kanner Arts Center. And I'm going to move to a different realm now. We move along here fluidly and mobily, and let's hear some music, and then we'll tell you what this is all about.
Don't fail, you know, I feel so good. Yes, I feel so good. You know, I feel so good. I feel like balling a jack. I feel so good. Hope I always will. Feel just like a jack out with a Jenny out behind the hill. You know, I feel so good.
Well, you've been listening to a cut from Dave and Phil Alvin's I Feel So Good. It's off their new album called Common Ground, and it's going to be a part of, thank you again, Warren Hellman, the Hardly Strictly Bluegrass. It's going to be in Golden Gate Park from the 3rd to the 5th of October. What can we expect this year?
Well, a lot of the returning old favorites. I mean, you know, we can't have Hardly Strictly without Emmylou Harris. You know, she will be there.
Or Lucinda Williams, probably.
Lucinda Williams, absolutely. Ralph Stanley. You know, he's kind of up there, and for him to still be making live performances is just amazing. Yola Tengo is going to be there, Chris Isaak, and, you know, many, many other people. That Ryan Adams, who's been sort of off the radar for a while, he's back, and he'll be there.
Great. And this is their 14th year?
This 14th, is 14th. Yeah. It's all free.
And it's all such a funny mix, too. You know, the classic balance is you have Outkast or some band like that with these very traditionalists. So this year you get Laurie Lewis from Berkeley, who's a fabulous bluegrass musician, and then Sibo Mato, which is this oddball Japanese duet who sing very funny pop music. So, yeah, it's a great blend.
Doing bluegrass from Japan?
I don't think they see that's the thing. They don't
strictly.
Do bluegrass.
No, yeah, bluegrass is a big umbrella.
It's a big umbrella.
It's getting bigger
right.
and bigger thanks to this festival, yes.
Well, let's hear some more music. I'll even announce. This is a group called, you love these names, the New Pornographers. New Pornographers, Brill Bruisers, the title song from their album, they're going to be at Treasure Island. David, you know where anything about the name and its etymology?
No, I really don't, and I probably should stick to that story, right?
Well, stick to telling us about what's going on at Treasure Island.
This has obviously become one of the premier music festivals in the Bay Area. It's a lot of fun. It tends to sort of skew a little younger, a little edgier. You know, this year's lineup includes Janelle Monáe, whom I absolutely love. I've seen her live several times. She is fantastic. Outkast, the aforementioned Outkast, is going to be there. Zedd, who's a German music producer, DJ type, very young and hip, and he'll be there. And, you know, it's 2 days, the 18th and 19th. Do take public transportation. You can't say that often enough. You should not drive cars onto Treasure Island. And it should be a lot of fun.
And we should mention that the Masonic is reopening in San Francisco.
It is. And you know, this has been a little bit of a neighborhood controversy. They're a little concerned, and rightly so, about traffic impact and all that kind of thing. Parking is never joyful in that neighborhood. But it will reopen. In fact, the reopening is going to be with Beck on the 19th. Later on the 30th of September, the Pixies are going to be there. Train will be there as well. And it's remodeled. It's sort of been made into more of a competitive music venue.
It's more designed for concerts. Really.
It really is.
Well, acoustically remodeled it, too.
Yeah, the acoustic design and everything. I mean, it never was made for concerts. It sort of made do here and there. But it should be quite an addition to the music scene.
And Beck will be playing there 19th of September. Right. The Pixies playing there September 30th. Train.
I'm not sure when that date is, but yeah.
And Chrissy Hynde is
online,
there, too.
Yeah. Oh, Chrissy Hynde, too. Yeah. Well, let's go over to Berkeley for a moment with you, Cyrus. Freight and Salvage, the Bengtsons.
Yeah, the Bengtsons. We have a cut from them, I believe, that I'd love to hear. This is a wonderful unique group that have carved out a funny niche of folk and alt art, rock, and also they do musical theater. Let's hear something. I think Judy Campbell, your producer, has something queued
she
up.
She picked
for us.
Something called "You Need" from the Bergsons. The Bengtsons, you need.
Yeah, they're going to be at Freight and Salvage. So this is a folk club, of course, but they're going to be at Freight and Salvage on September 29th. But they can sound very folky at times. Their show last year, 100 Days at the Z Space, was just fabulous. So this is why they made my top 10 list. They were so exciting early this year in their theater production, which is kind of a gender-reversed La Boheme. This should be a lot of fun. This is a Monday night also, so nobody, you don't have any excuse. There's nothing else going on.
Well, there are other things going on, actually. I mean, I had put out the challenge to listeners, what do you never miss, and what do you think people should know about that's going to be there, which sort of gives people license to say, my group's going to be appearing, or something along those lines. Yeah. But here's what I got, actually, some good stuff. Pamela writes, 15th anniversary of the San Francisco Electronic Musical Festival, September 11th to the 14th. Mm-hmm. Nick writes, something I never miss is the Campbell Oktoberfest in downtown Campbell. There's a 5K and 10K race, and then you celebrate by eating sausages and drinking beer. And
I actually go to that.
Leslie Chang, our intern, looked up the weekend of that. It's October 18th and 19th. Thanks, Nick, for that. And Gary writes, Old Hat, starring Bill Irwin and Dave Shiner, playing at the American Conservatory Theater, September 10th, October 5th. So lots of other things to avail yourself
of. That was on my top 20. I love their work. They're wonderful clowns.
Let's find out how you guys work. How do you cut these things down? You say top 20.
It's painful. Yeah, it's painful. It's like cutting off one of your arms sometimes. Yeah, you think, I love
both. Those got too hyperbolic.
That's my role.
That's your role, yeah.
You know, we have a huge list. We keep a running list. And the two of us, as well as our producer, Susie Racho, who's absolutely invaluable, you know, it's this just sort of, you know, group discussion that begins live and continues online, you know, for a week. And there are often last-minute changes. But we try to have a lot of variety in there, not only financially and in terms of the kind of production that we're talking about, but also, you know, in terms of, you know, the geography of the Bay Area. We want to make sure we take care of people who don't come into San Francisco all the time, but are maybe in the South Bay. So, you know, all of that somehow melts down to five choices a week. I'm not quite sure how it happens. It's like the math I do on my income taxes, I think.
It's daunting.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
It's the same thing with questions I get about how do you decide what guests to book and how do you decide what shows to do and all those sorts of things. It's always challenging. And
something you feel passionate about. That's a big part of it. Something, you know, discovery. We always eschew local and discovery and as David just said, diversity.
Yeah. Well, let's move up to the North Bay. Wells Fargo Center for the Arts in Santa Rosa, September 11th. Cyrus, Brandi Clark.
I'm excited about this show. This is Brandi Clark put out an album last year called 12 Stories. I just think it was one of the best albums I heard last year. Every song was funny and full of heartache as well. And this is NPR had a great description for Brandi Clark's music, country music that is for thinking and drinking. She's also a prolific songwriter, and right now she's touring with Jennifer Nettles, who has had a big hit with Brandi in a duet, doing a song called His Hands, which is about domestic abuse. But Brandi does an opening set about 30 minutes, usually just with a guitar by herself to open the show. And then she comes on and does the His Hands as a duet. This will be at the Wells Fargo Center on September 11th. And I'm going to be out of town, or I would definitely go to this. But Clark is a career you want to follow.
Let's hear from her. This is Stripes from her album Stories. Well, there's the thinking and drinking. That's going to be at the Wells Fargo Center, Brandi Clark for the Arts in Santa Rosa, September 11th. And a lot of things not to miss here, a lot of great things to see and do. You mentioned Susie Rancho, who is sitting over behind the glass here and so forth. What does she do? So I'm looking at Judy Campbell, who's indispensable to me. Why is Susie indispensable to you guys?
You know,
let's give the producers their props.
No, absolutely. I mean, we really could not do this show without her. She knows a lot about a lot of things, number one, which is really valuable. But she's particularly knowledgeable about music, pop music, and all areas of it. She also, you know, every little detail that we don't think about, that we're incapable of thinking about, she picks up and takes care of.
She finds the music and reminds us why to play it and makes good choices.
Is David suggesting you guys aren't that strong on detail? Are we fellow travelers in that
sense?
Some
of us are.
That's right. We just talk. We just paid to talk, you know. That's right.
Well, talk to me about what rises particularly to – I'm going to put you on the spot here – to the top here. You've made a lot of recommendations. You've given us a lot of information. Yeah. Get into that field of what is really particularly not to be missed. And I think, David, you've said a couple here. But
I have said a few, yeah. I don't know. I mean, why don't we give Cy a chance?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I come back to Party People at the Berkeley Rep. I come back to Altered States and other symphony concerts this coming year, the Bengtsons. We didn't even mention San Francisco Jazz. I'm really excited about a bunch of shows this fall.
And
Charles Lloyd, that's right. And very late this fall, in early December, Ravi Coltrane will be in town for 4 days on doing a variety of things. But on one of those nights, he's going to have working with some handpicked crew of musicians, and they're going to redo his father, John Coltrane's A Love Supreme. And, you know, Ravi's a great saxophonist. It should be very exciting to see
his
son.
Not as great as his father.
It'd be very exciting to see him reimagined it, though, for current audiences. And then SF Jazz is also doing a kind of a little mini Brazilian fest with Eliane Elias opening in just a couple days, Caetano Veloso over at the Paramount Theater, and Milton Nascimento Cemento coming in. It should be just, there's just so much great music.
They got Eric Butler at SF Jazz too.
Well, know. Right, Eric mm-hmm. Butler is, I believe he's playing with Charles Lloyd. No, I'm sorry, that's Eric Harlan. Never mind. Yeah, Eric Butler is a lot of fun too.
They mentioned somebody else too who's coming, and then I want to talk about the seasonal differences because this is kind of fascinating. Whether you find more excitement in the autumn than you do in the spring, let's say, or the summer or winter. But Patricia Lockwood, the author of Rape Joke, is coming to the JCC here in San Francisco.
Yeah. That's right. Yeah, no, and I imagine you may have her on the show, but Lockwood has become famous for this poem called Rape Joke, and it's not at all funny poem about the, you know, the weird relations between a rapist and the victim. And her whole book of poems is full of odd and sexually provocative and funny poems that make you think. Again, we like the thinking part. That her book is called Motherland, Fatherland, Homeland Sexuals. She's also a Twitter star, I guess. This is one of the things, I guess, if you're a poet, it makes you very good at
Twitter
those compressed,
stars, you know.
Compressed lines. Yes,
just by number. I guess they get stellar by the numbers that they have following them. What about poetry readings, though? I mean, are you keen on them? Do you follow them? They used to be, you know, major events, especially in San Francisco.
Yeah, I don't. I mean, I pay attention to them. I think, you know, primarily with Litquake, which will be celebrating its 15th anniversary this year. That's actually one of my absolute don't misses. So they have that, but I don't know that they. You know, I mean, obviously there's a huge poetry fan base in the Bay Area, as there are for most literature.
Well, we. As you know, are in a pledge period here at KQED Public Radio. We're talking to David Wiegand and Cyrus Musiker. And for more information about how to support KQED, all you have to do is go to kqed.org. I'm Michael Krasny. Let me go back to the seasons here. Do you find differences qualitatively or quantitatively? What are they?
I mean, it's funny. Like, I also do TV reviews, and there's no such thing as the fall season anymore, you know, in TV. But there is with this. And what was true when I first got to town more than 20 years ago is true now, is that, you know, the fall is huge, the spring is huge, and everybody gets out of town in the summer. You know, once the symphony finishes, it's whatever summer festival they're doing, if it's Beethoven or whoever, and the opera finishes, it's usually three late season operas. That's it. Kind of gets very, very quiet in July and especially in August.
Yeah,
so.
It can be. I mean, to some extent, you could say there's just way too much stuff in the fall, and it gets you don't have time to catch up to everything. There's a few companies that are smart and have tried to take advantage of that. And Shotgun Players, for instance, I know begins its season kind of on the off cycle. SF Playhouse always has a musical running that goes all summer long. Sometimes very successfully, they
and
did.
And actually, you know, for them, a theater works open. It's season in the middle of the summer, you know, every year. So you know, it's certainly you can take advantage of it, and you're not going to be sitting home, you know, knitting in the summer.
Let me give a couple more listener suggestions. Clark writes, Berkeley Old Time Music Convention, September 16th to the 21st. This is still part of the autumn season. It includes the string band contest at the Berkeley Farmers Market on Saturday, September 20th. And Jeff writes, I can't imagine my Christmas celebrations, now we're moving into winter, without taking in a Golden Gate Men's Chorus show. GGMC is a world-class community chorus here in San Francisco. They won one silver and two gold medals at the World Choral Games this summer. Didn't know that. Yeah. Congratulations.
Yeah, Chanticleer always has great Christmas shows, too. There's always a lot of great Christmas shows. Yeah.
Well, we'll have you back to do the Christmas do list. Okay. But before we should say something about dance before we let you go here, because there is this Chitrish Das Dance Company.
Yeah, I mean, an incredible Indian dance company that always does extraordinary work. I mean, it's really an absolute treasure, as well as the Australian Ballet is coming to Cal Performances. That's a very big deal. I remember when they were here during the time that what we call the War Memorial hiatus, and right before then, the ballet had an international dance festival, and they were part of it. And also Sasha Waltz is going to be at Cal Performances, an extremely interesting, really important European company.
You're both encyclopedical in terms of all these events that are happening. Can you tell me something, though, about this Indian dance company? They're going to premiere something called Yatra, which is a journey from India to Spain with Kathak master Pandit Chitrish Das.
Yeah, I think they're looking at the connections between Spanish dance and Indian dance. I mean, the rhythmic and stylistic links that unite the music. And isn't there some connection, I believe, there where some of the roots of this music come from the same place? Some of
Spanish and Indian,
dancing.
Really?
Is,
oh. Yeah. That in itself is pretty fascinating. Do you find, by the way, I mean, I've kind of calibrated this into different genres, but a lot of these genres do cross over.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think we should have like a mixed media section in the show every week because, you know, there's all – I mean, the sort of thing that MacLeod is doing with the Ethiopian Eritrean Festival, for example, that's multidisciplinary. You know, it'll be music and art installations, so on and so on. And we're finding so much of that. You find it very frequently in Alonzo King's Lion's Dance. Company, for example, and
he often commissions new music for his pieces.
I'd like to give a plug for that because I think my friend Jeanette Gittler has done a great job.
Yeah, it's another treasure of the Bay Area. There's a lot of that, you know. I think that obviously it's sort of contemporary all over the world, but I think especially in the Bay Area.
So I'm gonna put you two on the spot here as we come to the end of the hour. We've divided into genres. We should be more mixing of the genres. But if there's one genre that's closest to your heart as individuals, what would it be? What is it?
I can answer for him.
What, you can? What is that?
Theater.
Oh, yeah. Well, he's right. He's right. Theater. Yeah,
well, I would have guessed that for you, Cyrus, too. Weekend is a little more mysterious.
I'm more mysterious.
It's TV for him. No,
it is TV, really. Yeah. You know, it's Two Broke Girls. Just kidding. Believe me. I think it's probably dance. I would have said pop music, but, you know, pop music and dance, I think, are my particular favorites.
Well, and you love Benjamin Britton, the work.
Well,
of it.
Yes. I mean, I don't know.
Great music.
I'm a polymath or, you know, very shallow, depending on your definition.
I've often said when people say you're a polymath, I correct them. The word is dilettante.
Yeah, right.
good to have you both.
Thank you.
And you can find out about all their picks by going to our website, kqed.org. And you can also find us on your radio dial. We're here with you Monday through Friday, 9 to 11, an hour repeated 10 to 11 in the evening. Forum's produced by Judy Campbell, Irene Noguchi, and Tina Lauerberg. Our engineer is Danny Bringer, and we get online support from David Marks. Senior editor is Dan Zoll. Thank you for being a part of this morning's program, and for all of us at KQED Public Radio, I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio, the Germanicos Foundation, and the Generosity Foundation, and the Bernard Osher Foundation, supporting higher education and the arts.